Jerry W. from Los Alamos.
Hello, my name is Jerry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jerry.
I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic, actually. It's an honor to be here. I guess it's a privilege. An honor and a privilege to be here. That's incredible to be here. I want to thank Jackie for inviting me to be here. And I want to thank you all for showing up. And I heard I missed Santa. Darn. Anyway. You know, all right, let's see here. I'm really grateful. That's where I'm at now. I got my 6 years, like it says over there, on December 7th. And I'd never been in the program before. I never wanted to stop drinking. I didn't come in here to stop drinking. I came in here to lessen a prison sentence 6 years ago. I didn't think I wanted to stop drinking. But like my sponsor said, and he had to leave. He had a medical thing he had to go deal with. I drank from 12 to 61. There were times I didn't drink, and it was because I was doing opiates, and I didn't need to drink. I couldn't move. I was where I wanted to be. My heart was beating, my lungs were working, and that was where I wanted to be. And I wanted you to stay away from me, I'll stay away from you. And that was my place. That was, all right, so I started drinking at 12 at bar mitzvahs. There was lots of booze on these tables. I was raised back east in New York. I was born in 1949. I got thrown out of Hebrew school before my bar mitzvah. So my point is, you know, some of us are mentally and emotionally, well, so my whole life I thought of ridiculous things. 100 a second go through my mind, even now. But because of this program, I've learned how to pause and not do them. Alcohol made me do them. It allowed me to justify the things I did basically my whole life. So real quick, what it was like. It was like I was nuts. I was unhappy. I was bummed. My mother and father were normal people. They were normies. My grandfather was a big, basically gangster. In New York, he drove around in a bulletproof car. We had shooting range under our house. I played with guns with silencers when I was a little kid. We would go throw them in the Bronx River occasionally. I grew up with my grandfather owned the policeman where I lived. So I grew up with no respect at all for cops. I still don't have much. And that's something I have to work on, I guess. I got a few more years. Maybe I'll get there. Let me see. I did a lot of crazy things. I stayed away from my family. I loved my mother and father, but I didn't want to be around them. I didn't want to be around any of my relatives. They didn't want to be around me. Once I got sober, I'll tell you something real quick, jump ahead. I got a Facebook thing, and it was like, are you my cousin? And it was from this woman. And I said, did you knock my father out at a funeral 30 years ago? Yeah, I'm the guy who knocked out your father. What are you up to now? So I drank a lot. My parents never saw me sane. They never saw me sane. And that's a bummer. You know, my father died 20 years ago. My mother died 15 years ago. Maybe it's 16 or 21 now. So they never saw me sane, and they were very disappointed. They gave me unconditional love, you guys. And I just, so I grew up in New York. There were lots of fights and stuff. And I was like this size when I was like 10, it seems. I was like this big, jerky guy. I was like the tallest guy in sixth grade. And I just never grew again. But so all through high school and stuff, and I played in bands and blah, blah, blah. And there were lots of fights. And I was always the one that was like having to put down my bass and deal with it. And I played with some pretty good people, actually. Steven from Aerosmith, and got busted with him in 10th grade for pot. He was Steven Tallarico then, and I was still just me. So here's the deal, you guys. My whole life, stuff would happen. I would get a resentment, which I learned about here, and I would deal with it. And I would put it away for years. I mean, the rabbi that threw me out of Hebrew school that I pushed, I was 12. I was like 19, and I saw him walking at one night. And I drove up, when I yelled, and it was a dark street, and he went to recognize me. I had a big beard by then. And I've always had a beard, it seems. The last day I shaved for high school graduation, they made me shave it off, actually. And I didn't want to go, but my mother said, you got to go to graduation. So that was the last day I shaved, actually. It was high school graduation, 67. And I never understood that, why you would wake up in the morning and put a razor on your neck and throw it. I don't know who the hell thought of that. But no, seriously, I don't get it. We don't shave our eyebrows. Why do we shave this? I mean, really? You know? Okay. So this rabbi, 7 years later, I see him, and I'm like, hand me that gun. So this guy I'm with. He's like, what? No, not that one. The one with the blanks. So he gives me that. And I go, can you tell me where we are, how to get to? And he walks over and I go, ah, bam, bam, bam. And I shoot this rabbi with blanks and drive away. And now I'm like, all right, I'm even with this guy. This is like 7, 8 years later. So the point is, I was just a piece of work. You know, some guy stole my bike, an older guy, and I saw him coming down the street with it. So I ran in the house, got out my bow and arrow, and I tried to kill this mother. But it hit the spokes, and his bike fell over, and he came and he beat me up. I was little, he was old. What did I do? I went to his house and put grinding compound in his oil of his Corvette. Yeah, I won again. And so I did lots of things. I could spend 3 hours telling you the crap I did, throwing people through windows without opening them. From second story. Justified, though. He was hitting my friend, and I'm throwing him through this window. That's all there is. Okay, so I'm in New York. I get out of college. Incredibly, I made it through college with the help of many drugs, and I was an architect, and I'm good at it. So I got a civil engineering degree and an architecture degree. I wrote a book, actually, with some people that was used as a textbook for a while, and then it was real radical, so they took it and buried it, and it's gone now. You can't anything. It's like I've been thrown out of everything I've ever been on, anything I belong to. I've been on football teams. There's no record of it. I've been on I was thrown out of Boy Scouts. I didn't like the Boy Scout camp. I didn't like the guy, and he was always snapping his towel at me, this older guy. So that night, I set his tent on fire and cut all the ropes so it fell in on him. Then I swam across Lake George. They thought I drowned. And they had all this police looking for me, and my parents had to come get me. So basically what I'm trying to say is here, I've been like my whole life, not fitting in, not wanting to fit in, and when I had to fit in, you didn't want me fitting in. I got hit by a car when I was 13 because I drank a little bit after a basketball game that we went to, and everybody was on this side of the road, it was snowing. I was over here with a friend, we're going up a hill, this car was accelerating to get up the slippery hill, and my friend ran across the street, and I thought, oh, I'm going to chase him with this big snowball, and I just ran right in front of this car, thinking, I'll just jump up and flip over the hood or something. I don't know what I thought, but I got hit by this car. I went through the radiator, the fan, the hood broke, went through the windshield. It made a big noise. It was really loud. Couldn't walk. They said I'd never walk again. I was like laying there. I walked. I was in the hospital, though, in beds for a couple months. My pants just fell off. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. I took off the suspenders. It's too hot. Okay. All right. So I'm back in New York after college. I meet up with some guys. I was a blasting engineer working with dynamite. That was fun. I had tickets to go to Woodstock. And that weekend we had a big blast and I couldn't go. 22,000 pounds of dynamite. We spent the whole week drilling and loading these holes. 22,000 pounds of dynamite. That's a big blast. This was in New York, and it was like carving on a giant scale to me. And I got up there and I started firing this up and I'm smoking opium. Getting ready for this because it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I hit the button and all these officials are there, you know, because it's a big blast. Normally when you blast, the ground comes up a little bit, and then there's smoke and stuff. This time the ground just kept coming up, because I thought, well, it's the end of the summer, I'm going back to school, I'm going to put about 15-20% more in this whole thing. So they're all back like a mile and a half. I'm on top of an uncompleted bridge, standing on these like 10-inch beams. They're really high. And I hit this thing, and I'm observing, and holy mackerel. So this whole, the ground is over me now, and it's like, ha. Ah. And they teach you, they stress when you're a blaster. Don't turn and run, just dodge it. So I'm up there, and bing, 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 things are hitting and all, and that was the last day I worked there. And so I get in with some guys in New York, a couple ex-military guys, which I am not. Whoa, I'm not. I went through a whole thing about that. I got drafted. I got the lottery. They wanted me to go. I got an early number. I called the White House, collect. I said, I could do more for the country if I don't do that. And then I had to leave school, run around, FBI. Finally, they hassled my parents. I went to Canada. I didn't like that. I came back. I went to a board of five guys, and I explained to them how I felt, and I wasn't a conscientious objector. I wasn't going to go to jail for that. But put me in the Army, and I know blasting. Put me in the Army. And they just said, all right. I said, you know, if the bad guys come, I got guns. I got great guns. And I'll get a green hat, and I'll shoot at them with you if they come. But I'm not going over there and shooting at these guys with freaking... My dad was a big deal in the Army in terms of a hero. He medals, went behind the lines in World War II. He didn't think I had to go to Vietnam either, so... I didn't. My dad's mother came over here when she was 13. She left Europe because of the persecution there. She said to her parents, we got to get out of here. These people are going to kill us. Her parents said they're not. She came to the United States by herself when she was 13, and her parents were killed, my great-grandparents. Okay, so there you go. So my father, he was this straight good guy in New York, and like I said, my mother's father, my grandfather, was like this maniac from Brooklyn. He had like one eye because it was shot out by a coon, he called him. Okay. victimless crimes, though. Bookmaking is a victimless crime, unless you don't pay. All right, so he had that going for him. And all right, so I came out here. I was in New York. I got with these guys that were Vietnam veterans, crazy special forces guys, because they like to get loaded. And I like to get loaded. That was the only thing we had in common. And we decided to make some money, so they, well, you're an architect, let's figure this out for us. So I figured out this great plan to rob this big raceway in New York. And we were going to go in there and rob this giant raceway. But somebody might have gotten hurt, and I didn't want to do that for money. I didn't care killing you with my fists if it was over nothing. But I didn't want to go in there and rob something and kill somebody, you know? So I backed out of this thing. They went ahead and did it. They wound up getting busted. They thought I had something to do with that. And I would have had to either kill three men or leave New York, basically, bottom line. So I married an old high school sweetheart whose mother was so happy when we broke up that she bought her a car. I got these four gold teeth from another high school sweetheart's father who was a dentist when he found out I was marrying somebody else. He gave me these four crowns as a gift. Yeah. Okay, so we got married, we took her car, we sold it, we got a van. We went back and forth transporting outside issues from Florida to California and from California to Florida. Made a lot of money, and blah. All right, so here we go. So I got divorced in Albuquerque. That's where we wound up, where the money ran out. She became a banker and I stayed me. I went into a bar because I was depressed. I got beat up. I passed the bar. It was 11 in the morning. I saw these cowboys coming out, three of them, and I had my hands in my pocket, and I was like, yeah, effing who? And this cowboy punched me right in the face. Oh. And I thought, well, I'll just pull out my knife, and these guys were... I thought, no. I crawled under a van because they were kicking me and stuff, and I thought, I have to leave Albuquerque, but first I'm going to get a rifle. I'm going to go into that bar and kill these people. So I'm walking down the street, and a car pulls over, and it's these two shrinks that I worked on their house, these cool people. And they said, hey, what are you doing, Jerry, all beat up? And I told them my plan. And they said, that's great. We'll drive you over to a gun shop. Get in the car. So I got in the car, and they took me to their house and kept me from, like, Thursday to Sunday. I did all this primal scream stuff, and I learned stuff. I went back and tore apart pillows. And I remember the first time my mother, when I was crying in the crib, And instead of looking at me, she looked at the clock. All of a sudden, I was on a schedule. So to me, it was like, what? I didn't get that at all. I hated that. I don't know, I remember that. Anyway, so then I come out here. Albuquerque's over, you know, divorce, blah, blah, blah. I come out here, and I'm working for the Alta Vista Park District, doing an incredible amount of outside issues. And drinking, you know. Went to New York, and I met Osley years before that. The famous Osley did some of his outside issues. I was pretty lucky in terms of I always had the highest quality outside issues. But drinking was always there, and it was always really expensive, stupid wine. Like, when I had wine, I liked Jameson's. That was my deal. So I drank a lot. I got worse and worse. I got a family from Isla Vista. We got married, Maria and I, my ex-wife. We had a couple kids, which I didn't want to do. I told her I was too nuts. The world was too suck. But let's, all right, she said, we have to have kids. So we had two kids. And they're great kids. They're doing good. One's 27, one's 34. I saw one of them today, actually, my son, who's like a famous winemaker. Gets flown to Europe. He's got his own label and stuff. I've never tasted his wine. Incredible. Never. I didn't like wine that much anyway. But I never tasted his wine. So that's interesting. And my daughter, she's cool. Her name's Almond. We don't talk much, but hopefully we will. It's only been 10 years since my divorce. I was loaded and scary the whole time they were growing up. I was nice to them, I thought. I always thought, I'm not hurting anybody except myself. That's not true, you guys. You know that. There's a lot. They were afraid to bring their friends to the house. I might be pressure cooking cow crap to grow mushrooms in it or something. You know, it really stinks. So it was hard for them. And now it's like, I accept it. I don't have to like it, but I accept where our relationship is, and it's not great. And it's because of this program. So, here, let's speed up to, like, I'm in Los Alamos after my last divorce. I come home to a note from her after 31 years, and I'm drunk, so I just let her take the house and the money, and we had a house in San Ynez, a big fancy house, and not fancy, but, you know, big house, and a big backyard, and blah, 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 at the end of the street, and a bank account, and I just let it all go because, hell, I'm an architect. I'll make my $100,000 a year, no problem. It's like the same year as my divorce, the economy tanked. I was working on a house for a producer of The Shawshank Redemption, a big house, $1.5 million house. And my divorce happened, and he fired me because he goes, I can have a friend that's crazy, but I can't have an architect right now. So I pleaded with him. He rehired me. We finished the job, and that was a happy ending. Okay. But that was like my last job, and that was like 10 years ago. I was drunk. I really started drinking a lot at that point. So I was missing my kids because of divorce. I was at a bar and at Los Alamos. A couple cops came in, and I don't like them. And you know, what do you do? I'm like, oh, God, it smells like bacon, you know, stupid remarks. And they were nice to me. They're watching me carve. They kind of knew me. I was the guy that carved or something. People would buy me drinks. It was great. I would get drunk at my house and then have to drive to the bar because I was too loaded to walk. Yeah, I'd be like, but I could make it to my car and just, oh, and get there. So, all right, so these cops want me to go home because I'm being rowdy or something. And I'm just telling them, just let me sit here. Step back, please. Let me have some air. And he went through the elbow. I thought, bulletproof vest. So I threw the foot into the outside issues, basically. And so I had these two cops, basically. I was winning for a second. I was 61 years old, man. And I had one on the ground, reaching for something that, like, oh. And the other one, I got scared. I didn't know, so I punched him in the throat. And they both tased me. And then they hit me with sticks for a long time. So I lost, like, 7 teeth, you know? That's all right. I got a lot of humor. Anyway, so I lost, like, 7 teeth, ultimately, over that. And I was faced with, and they handcuffed me when they got me down. Paramedics came. Kick them. So I'm assault on peace officers, assault on paramedics. Who gets assault on paramedics? I mean, that's absurd. But I didn't. There were Indian people and Indian doctors I decided killed my father because they misdiagnosed him, and so I didn't like them. All right, so I'm going away for 8.5 to 10 years for what I did, prison. And I tell the judge, I can't go to prison. They don't have kosher vegetarian food. He goes, that is not helping you at all. I'm like, dude, tell me you never wanted to kick a cop in the nuts. Come on, judge. Even then, I was like, whoa. So now I'm looking at probably 10 or 12 years after that. So I'm going to anger management. I'm going to shrinks. And I'm just pissed. I got to go to AA to lengthen my sentence, they tell me. It'll help you. So I start coming to AA. And I'm hearing women in Solvang, as a matter of fact. Oh, I had a mimosa and burnt the toast, so I'm in AA. I could not relate to these women. I mean, their bottoms were like... when somebody cursed, I could actually relate to them, you know? Sorry, guys. No disrespect, really. I probably lost 15 pounds in that Santa Claus costume. really? All right, so I come into here, and I start going to the 1600 Club, and I start hearing some greedy stuff that I could relate to. Like, yeah, I threw my family in a ditch and put gasoline on them. You know, stuff like that, stuff I could relate to. And although there was somebody in this room, he's not here now, but his wife is. And I saw this guy in here, and I thought, wow, this guy's in here, and he's talking about this higher power, and he believes it? Wow. I don't think this guy would say this if he didn't believe it. Wow. So I started listening. I read the steps over there now. Good. And as we understood him, I thought that was really cool. As we understood him, because when I was doing all this LSD and things, I was with God. I mean, I was laying on the runway of Miami International Airport watching 747s land over me, feeling the heat of their jets when they threw them in reverse and stuff. And, oh, I was there. I was with the higher power, I thought. You know, it was... incredible. So I got to live through that too, which is cool. So anyway, I come into the rooms and I start really just being willing. The willing, you know, H-O-W thing. And you know, somebody read out of chapter 5, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Okay, that is big because... most of the people in here are following the path and we're having like better lives. There's people that don't follow the path and they're all suggestions, of course. And they might go out. And I can't go out because I see people here like Mr. Bill with 40 years. And these people that keep coming to meetings because in my mind, hey, I haven't drank in 6 years. I could suck down half a bottle of Jameson's. I'd be fine. Or I could have a glass, one shot, and I probably would be fine. But in 2 or 3 days or a week, I might have 2 shots. And the next thing you know, I'm breaking out in taser darts again. And, and Santa Maria pretty much told me, we'll just shoot you next time. The cops there, they said, you know, the first taser just pissed you off more. It scared us almost. So I'm not gonna risk it because my life's incredible. So I came in here, and like I told you, I have degrees in things that build a bridge. How the hell do you build a bridge? Well, you learn it from a book, okay? So I got this book. Joanne gave it to me in my first meeting, and it's 164 pages is all I had to read, she said. And here, it says in this book right here, like I would read a book and it would say, the purpose of this book is to show you how to survey a highway. Purpose of this book is to show you how to design a concrete or steel bridge. Well, to show alcoholics, woo, on a boat, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book, to show other alcoholics, and it's italicized precisely. So that's what this book's about. And this is a short little book, and there's hardly any graphs. There's nothing. Okay, so that's what it says right there in this edition. And then I kept looking. So I'm believing it. I'm starting to believe what people say, that this book, we're people who normally wouldn't mix. Well, duh, look around. You know? The tremendous fact for each of us is we have discovered a common solution. That is big. That is really big. That is like, I mean, my whole life I was one happy, unhappy guy and one pissed off guy. And I reacted like really fast, really aggressively. Okay? But it wasn't working out right. Yeah, that was probably not the right path to be on. So I came in here and I started to be, you know... we've lost the power of choice of drink. So this book, I really read this book. I read it a lot. I still read it. I read it pages every day. I do a lot of this reading. I stay up late at night. I read it. We've had deep and effective spiritual experiences. I'm like, what is that? Well, we had to find a power greater than ourselves. Because, you know, to me, and I still say it, I said it today probably 3 or 4 times, I do what I want. I said it today a few times. You know, I pray sometimes to, like, not let me act like I used to act. It's a slow thing, I suppose. But, and all the things that I used to do, they're still there. They're still there. I've got these tools I learned from you guys in this book, in the program, and normally I can pause enough to use those tools. And it always comes out better when I do that. Always. Always. But there are times when I don't. I snap. I slip. I had a thing. I went to see a sponsee, a former sponsee, a few weeks ago, probably a month and a half, 2 months ago now. And he was... He hadn't called me back. He hadn't showed up. And I thought, well, what would my Peter do? He'd come and find me and see what was up. So I drove up to this guy's house one night. And he came staggering out of the house drunk. And I didn't care. I thought, well, all right, he's a young guy. He's young, 20 young, I don't know what. And I said to him, all right, have you killed anybody since you've been drinking? No. I said, all right, you're good. You want to stop? Yeah, I've really screwed up. And he didn't put it quite like that. I said, good. Then his roommate came out, who was this older guy, probably, I don't know, half my age. And he was this contractor guy, and he was drunk too. And he started sort of arguing with me. Now, I know when you go on a 12-step, you're supposed to take 2 people. I've been hearing that. I didn't do that. I went by myself. So that was a mistake. The second mistake was, which I don't do anymore, I carried a knife. I used to carry 3 knives. One that you would see, one that was a carving knife, and a big scary one that you didn't see usually. And then I got down to where I carry 1 knife, you know, and maybe a carving knife. But that was probably the last knife. So this guy started with me. I said, I'm not here to talk to you, and I'm trying to, the program. I'm not here to hassle with you. You're drunk, go in the house. I'm here to... And he's like, F you, Jerry, and F this, Jerry, and F that, Jerry, and you stupid cult this and that. And I'm trying to keep it together. And I'm almost about to leave. And one more time, he's, F you, Jerry. And I just went, I'm going to love to, like, open this boy up and show him his intestines before I step on him. And I really thought that. And that is bad. And I came home, I was upset. Because I would have loved to have done that. And I'm good at it. Oh, my God, I'm good at it. I thought I wasn't, but I did it all right with those cops, and I'm probably okay still. So I keep thinking I'm too old to be like that, and I can't think like that, but I don't know. I'm really good at it. It's a course, isn't it? Hurting people. Yeah. So anyway, bottom line, I thought that, and my hand, and he saw my face, and he saw my hand going back as he stepped to me, and he just changed his expression and went in the house real quick. I was like, thank you, thank you, thank you. So I don't carry a knife now with me. So if that happens, I can't even go there. That's the best solution, you know? I guess. I don't know. I got a little pocket carving knife. But okay, so that's something, the program working in my life. When I was 4 months old in this program, I was still on the fence about the higher power of this and does he really care about me? And miracle of all miracles, I woke up, I mean, that morning, I was praying every morning, and I woke up and I thought, I've got a third of a year sober. God, bring that cop to me. There he is. I'm driving down the street. The cop, not the one I kicked, the one I punched in the throat, pulls over to the bar. Thank you, God. So then I was still carrying a big K-bar on my knife. Some of you guys know what that is. It's a military fighting knife, basically. Really good. So I'm going to go in there, I'm going to get a double shot of Jameson's, and I'm going to take this guy's face and hang it on my mirror. I didn't even think. The thing that upset me the most thinking about it was, oh, I'm going to have to go to a meeting and tell him I'm a new guy again. That's what I really thought. I didn't think about the cop's face hanging on my mirror. I just thought, oh, God. Well, that's what I'll have to identify as a new person. And I went, Well, that's okay. I'll stay sober 6 months this next time before I do something stupid. Cool. So I'm ready, you know. I go in there and I get out of my car. Jesus Christ. I get out of my car and it's terrible. I'm so embarrassed. No, I don't give it. I got underpants on, you guys. It's all good. I go in my car to get this hidden blade. And all of a sudden, this is April. April. It starts pouring hail on me, like burning hail. In April in Los Alamos. I was like, whoa. I looked up. I probably shouldn't do this. Okay. So I get in my car and I go to a meeting. And to me, that was like a little spiritual awakening kind of thing. Like, hey, jerk! I mean, you know, you got hit by a car and you weren't paralyzed. You got knocked out. You went to the bottom of a pool. You didn't die. Somebody pulled you up. You got maybe a little brain damage from that. I don't know. jerk, wake up! And that's what I kind of think. I think, like, you know, God said, hey, four. Throw some lightning at this asshole. And I think that's what that tasing was, you know? Because it basically, my life was unmanageable, I figured, at that point. And, you know, it says in the book how when we're doing this, we're in the midst of our drinking, we don't even realize it. I thought it was normal what I did. I'd be at the bar until it closed. I'd come home and pass out somewhere and come to somewhere. My roommate at the time would go to work. I would get up and drink. I'd pass out again. She would come home. I'd make dinner so I could go to the bar real quick. And I kind of thought that was normal. I mean, until I got tased, I didn't even know anybody who knew anybody who got tased. I got tased. And that's, you know, I've been hit by cars, I've been stabbed, and I've been shot at, and this was bad. This was bad. It's very personal. It's like a knife. A knife is real personal, a lot more personal than a gun. And this was personal, too. I mean, these guys were inflicting great pain. And they were, I don't know, and then they were hitting me with sticks after I was all bound up with handcuffs and stuff. So I came into the program. I started going to meetings. Somebody decided they'd be my sponsor. I started doing the steps with him. I did my fourth step, and I thought, you know, if I read my fourth step with this guy on the fifth step, I'll have to kill him and put him on my next list. So he can't be my sponsor. So I got another sponsor, Peter, who, you know, somebody I would never hang out with. But he was a big guy, and I thought, well, it's either Peter or Luke. I thought I'd have to get a sponsor now. You know, somebody that... And I went to the Lions Den. The first time I looked around, I saw Luke. And I thought, I'm going to go up there and punch him right in the throat. So that they know, you know. Now he's, you know, I call Luke when things are horrible. I called him that night after that thing with the sponsor, when I went to see my sponsor, and I called Luke because I couldn't even drive when I left there. I was shaking. Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of adventures for sure. And it seems that, like, when I did the outside issues, I didn't get in much trouble. It was when alcohol was involved. You know, we're having a big party. We need cigarettes. We're in an apartment building. I'll go get them. Okay, I don't need money. Oh, you know, we're drinking. I don't need money. Get in the elevator, go down to the lobby. This was a long time ago. Grab the cigarette machine, drag it into the elevator, bring it up to the sixth floor roof, throw it off the roof. Bam, cigarettes and money for everybody. What do you want? It's all out there, you guys. Come on. Now, alcohol made me think it was okay. Probably wasn't okay. I mean, lots of stupid things. Like that uncle thing, you know, I said, my grandmother's funeral, I was drunk. He said, better her than me or something. I just turned around and knocked his ass out. Everybody walked away. Whoa, backed up. Except my mother. She came over. Oh, dear. My little mother, too. God. So, yeah, I haven't had a drink in 6 years, you guys. After I got out of jail, for the initial, all that, you know, they take you to the hospital, they cut the taser darts out of your surgeon. Paramedics cut the wires, and then the surgeons come, they hold the gun in your ear, maybe not to everybody, but maybe that's standard procedure, and they tell you not to move while the surgeon pulls the wires out of you, and maybe it's not standard, and It was bad. You know, I was looking at going away for jail, so I planned my Canada escape and was going to do that. But then this AA thing started happening. My public defender told me, let's just keep going there. You're changing, man. You are changing. You almost look different than when I first met you. Well, yeah, I'm not all black and blue and shit. But we kept putting it off. And pretty soon it was like, wow, I'm not going to prison. I got house arrest. I didn't have to go to anger management anymore because I was brokering fights between the inmates there. It was like, I was the only guy who hit a man. I hit some cops. And I tell judge, they're trained for this. They had armor and shit. I mean, I'd be in anger management, and these big guys with tattoos, and they beat their kid and their wives. And I'm like, you pussies. Come screw with me after the meeting. I mean, really. You never hit a woman. You two little skinny shits should fight, excuse me. And you two big guys should fight and see what it's like to fight with a man. And the therapist, her eyes were like this big. Shut up, shut up. But it's true. So finally, I got a certificate. It's hanging in my house. I passed anger management. It's in my bedroom. Yeah, it's in the bedroom. Straight up to it. It's my architecture and engineering's not even up there. Just that's up there. So, you know, I started doing the steps, and my life, the promises, you know, they're actually sort of starting to come true for me. No matter how far down the scale we have gone. Well, I was pretty far down. I mean, I had morals, you know. Some guy ripped us off, we hung him. But right before he aspired, I kind of picked him up and cut him down because I had morals, you know. Where I grew up, it was pretty crazy. It was. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you always had to represent. I was like the biggest of my friends. So I was the Jew that had to fight the Italian all the time. And we had weapons. We'd make weapons and shop. You know, you're going to fight after school, so you'd make brass knuckles with big pointy things on them. The object was to, like, if I can hit this guy like this, he'll see his tongue stick out of his cheek and he'll hate it. You know, that was okay. That was okay. I mean, I never felt bad about anything I did, ever. Ever. Because in my sick, crazy head, I was justified. You know, so I've got this higher power. Let's get to some real stuff here. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us, whether they're in this program or not. I got a friend that wanted me to take him shopping, this old guy that can't drive. I don't really want to do it, but I did it. We went to all these places in Santa Maria, and I did it. And I do these things. I go to meetings with guys that can't get out of meetings. I go to their house, and I'd rather do something for somebody than to somebody now, for the first time in my life. When something weird comes at me, I don't have to go, oh, shit, and hit it. I can go, oh, well, and respond to it. I've had some 13th step, I guess, when I first came in here. Pot lady, you know, they said change anything. So I was hanging out with hippie women, and here was this makeup woman with hair and space, you know, style shit. Whoa, cool. So I hung out with her for a while, and she's dead now. She died in a nut house. Yeah. Not because of me. I'm just saying. I've had relationships that went weird with men and women. I had resentments, but now I can look at what I learned from each one of them. And that's, like, incredible. It's really incredible because I'm not – I don't get really – I don't get mad. I get even – I get amused. I'm freaking amused most of the time. I am. It just cracks me up, things. Politics and things, it just cracks me up. Like, ha! And I'm interested to see what's coming. I wake up, and I'm in a soft bed with sheets. And I don't have things asleep from sleeping on them in a weird way. And I'm like, well, thank you, God, or I call it God. I don't know. You know, I was thinking about this. I was just talking to some Christian fellows, and they're hitting me with this Bible stuff. And I'm going, that's all well and good with your Jesus and all. Everybody here, Jesus, that's great. But I keep thinking that my Creator, the Creator that created this, created all of this, things that are like light years away, where there might be intelligent life, chances are they're not looking at a picture of Jesus. Maybe they are. But I mean, my creator that created this created that. So to me, you're limiting yourself almost. I cannot understand my higher power as I understand him. If I understood him, how can I understand what did all this? Mm-hmm. I can't understand that. And these guys that say it was Jesus, they don't understand it either. I'm sure he's a good guy and he works for him, just like the Jewish guys and all the other ones. But the ultimate, I think he's way above all that. I almost think the whole thing is the golden rule, you know, do unto others. I think if everybody did that, we could throw away all this other stuff. But especially religion. But I think, you know, for me, since I came into this program, my life, I have a life. I didn't have a life before. I had this weird existence, like some kind of electrical circuit or something. I just kept doing things. And I didn't expect different outcomes. I didn't care. I mean, I didn't come in here to stop drinking at all. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I came in here to lessen a big prison sentence. And the urge for me to drink is non-existent. It got lifted really. Like my sponsor says, you want to stop drinking? Punch a cop in the face. And he goes, you want to stop drinking for your whole life? Kill a cop. And that's not true, because no matter where you are, you can get things if you want them. That's the bottom line. So I don't quite agree with that. I just know that when I came in here, you know, occasionally I'll think, you know, to me, drugs, alcohol, they're all the same. Oh, going and score them coke and coming home with it to drive home to prepare it for Freebase or something. Well, it was the same thing if I was going to make a martini. I'd get that shaker down and I'd get that ice out. And it was exactly the same. It was like romancing the process of getting there. Well, occasionally we go to this concert series, Tales from Tavern in the Maverick, and that I'm part of for like the whole time it's been around, 15 years, 14 years. And there's a bottle of Jameson sitting up on top of this wall for some reason. And I come in there and it's like, Jerry, I just get better with time. And I'm like, well, I get worse with time. So I have no urge for it, but occasionally I think, oh, it'd be nice to get that buzz or something. I kind of miss the buzz. But I get really high. I just got real high tonight sitting here. I'm just recovering from it, being Santa Claus. I mean, you know, my pants fit me before I came here, and then I did that, and now they're falling off. So I don't know. I know that I've found people in here that I've known for many years. And now we're in this program, and it just cracks us up because we can remember how we were, right, Tim? And life is just, it's incredible. I've met people here that I never would have met. I've met people here that I still, I mean, I don't like them, but I love them. I mean, I do. I want the best for them, I still judge. I do, and that's, you know, I think, look at this guy. He's saying one thing but doing something else. Hypocritical fellow. Yeah. I don't know. I'm happy. My life's incredible. You know, I get to hang out with you guys. I get to hang out with Barbara, who's like got many, many years in this and is very spiritual and smart and incredible. And the only thing bad about her I can think of is she hangs out with me. Yeah, it's incredible. And all you guys that I've known since I came in, and people that I've met along the way, it's freaking amazing. You know, you guys, I used to be an angry guy. I always had these great clouds in the back of my head. And I was always thinking of bad things. I mean, everything I told you tonight is like second shelf stuff. I left off all the crazy stuff. I mean, serious news, world-changing shit that I've been involved in. Seriously, but we can't go into that. I mean, horrible. But thank God it did not play out. I know that I've had four sponsees. One is dead, and the others, I think, went out. I don't know. But I'm still sober, you know? Mm-hmm. And This book. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And like I thought, yeah. Well, if I don't pray, if I don't pray and if I stop going to meetings, I get nasty quick. I do. I mean, that's like my default. And I'm working on it to change that, you know. I'm really working on it. But that's who I was for, you know, my first 60 years. So it's really hard for me to just like, oh, yeah, this is great. I'm not that guy. I'm not. I mean, I still say what I think, which I shouldn't. I don't have great control of tongue. But I'm way better, you know. Just that my kids are sort of starting to talk to me is cool. I have people in here that I just freaking incredibly love. I've learned so much from every person who shares. You know, they say it's God talking. Well, yeah, I guess it is, but it's something I need to hear, and I hear it from all you guys. And, you know, people came from Santa Maria and other places tonight to hear this idiot talk. I mean, that's amazing that I'm here talking to you guys. I went to a meeting in Los Alamos the other night. There were five of us. And I had 6 years. Mr. Bill there with 40 years. I mean, everybody had over 25 years there. And I get to be at this meeting and listen to what these people say. And some of them, I just think, whoa, I don't like this person or what. But over time, I'm starting to like, wow, they're saying really good stuff that I need to hear. And I might not like them, but I definitely love what I'm getting by being around them. So, yeah, it's incredible. I don't know, man. I like being in service. You know, I'm a greeter at meetings. I'm a secretary at meetings. I worked at central office until I stopped working there. I just couldn't bring my dog. Well, I'm not coming if I can't bring my dog. So I stopped, basically. And I couldn't front out books. You know, to me, somebody would come in and go, I'm from this group, and we need all these books. And I'd write them a thing, and $50, $80, whatever, taken, not paid. Nobody never pays me on any level in my life. So I knew I was going to get paid. It was for their group. And they would take and they'd go back, the secretary would write a check, and they'd bring it. Well, all of a sudden, I couldn't do that. And it's like the it's like the drug business. It's the lubrication is the front of the whole thing. And it was like that with the central office, I thought. So that's true. I sell a lot of books to these groups, and now it's like, oh, well, now we got to go get here and see what they want and bring a check. And it was just a lot easier before. I'd write it up, take it, not paid. They'd bring it like that week, a check, paid. It was no big deal. So I stopped working there because I was starting to get a resentment. And that makes no sense, getting a resentment in AA. I got enough out there, you know, I don't have to get them in here. And I'm really grateful to be here. Like I said that. But I really am. I mean, you guys, it's like, you know, I could keep talking about all the crazy-ass stuff I did, but there's no sense to it. What's important is that by working the program, by working these steps, and I screw up a lot. I mean, it's really easy to talk here and sound great. That's what I'm telling you. I screw up a lot. I mean, I do. But I'm still a million times better than I was. I haven't hit anybody in 6 years. I mean, just that. Wow. And I haven't, and I do 10th step, I'll do it right away. You know, if I see I do something wrong, I try to apologize right away. This little book, though, I mean, this little book has given me such a happy life. It tells me how to react. It tells me, I hear from you guys when something happens, what you did. And I can either go that way or not, but at least this is an option. I'm not, like, stumped, you know? So I've really learned a lot. I love y'all. And I got real tired of being Santa Claus there. It took it out of me, I guess, a little bit. Oh, poor me. No, no, I'm good. I'm energized. I'll probably be up till 5 or 6 again tonight. I went to bed last night early at 1 so I could get up today. But usually I'm up, I sleep, I don't know, 4 to 5, I go to bed. Hopefully, I try to get to bed by 3, but I still got another good 6 hours, 7 hours. But it's real quiet at night, and I can go get water at the machine in my underwear if I want, or, yeah, I could take my dog for a walk in my underwear if I want, in Los Alamos. And the only one who'll come by is the police, and they all know me, so I just give them the teeth. And they just keep going. Yeah, it's nice. So my life is great. My life's amazing. And I love AA. And I heard people would say, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I think, oh, you moron. It's the best. It is. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. You moron. But it's unbelievable. I'm just so grateful. And I think that's about it. God bless you, people.
My name's Jeff. I'm an alcoholic.